Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Now back to overtime with Grandy, Nansen, and Bennett with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
Yeah, welcome back. Our guy Cam behind the glass is just teasing us now with Romeo Doubs' third down conversion highlights over and over again.
Cool, man.
Yeah, thanks, Cam.
We're just giving you a hard time. You're doing great, Cam. By the way, an update. The Sunday night game, Niners have a rooting interest here if you are one that is still believing in the Niners' chances to win the NFC West. Rams and Eagles, we should all be big Eagles fans tonight. Mm-hmm. It is 7-3 Rams, though, early in the second quarter.
The other thing the Niners rooting for, Saquon Barkley less than 100 yards rushing.
Oh, yeah? Niners are rooting for that?
The Niners?
Yeah, they're pulling for it big time.
One person is pulling for that big time. Yeah.
You know, speaking real quick, I want to get back to what we were talking about before the break, and I want to get Sterling's thoughts on it, but just very quickly. The reason I love 49er fans is because not a single person has called in today and been like, actually, everything's fine. This is good. We've had some people who are like, yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not that upset because this and that, but, you know, it's disappointing.
Kyle,
But nobody's been like, you guys need to relax. Like, yeah, thank you, man. This is dire. Like, this is bad.
If
this is not going well, I'm glad everybody knows it.
888-957-9570. If you think that this isn't that bad, call and tell us, and we will all scream at you.
No, like, we can all disagree about, like, this is the worst thing, or that's angry. The worst thing, or
we'll get hung up on immediately,
or whatever. But the fact that nobody's been like, hey, actually, I thought such and such was pretty good today. Malik Mustafa, that tackle for loss is great.
How about Jalen Moore?
Oh,
yeah.
God.
I mean, Sterling gave
Leonard
him a shout
Floyd
out,
did right? have two sacks, mind you.
That's a
Leonard
good point.
Leonard Floyd had two sacks immediately after I texted a couple of buddies and was like, man, I've been so underwhelmed by Leonard Floyd as a player. And then just bop, bop.
There
just
we
immediately.
Go. There we go. You got to get those sacks in. Okay, we'll go to the phone lines in a second, but Sterling, I wanted to give you the opportunity to address what Eric in San Francisco asked us on the other side, essentially comparing Andy Reid's journey, longtime coach of the Eagles, generally successful but couldn't get the job done, then a couple of down years, got fired, hired by the Chiefs, and we know what the story is now with him and Patrick Mahomes and that dynasty. Talking about Kyle Shanahan's dogma, or generally his stubbornness, how do you view what Shanahan is going through right now and maybe how it that whole journey impacted Andy Reid and on his head coaching journey?
When Andy Reid got fired, I think what Eric's getting at, it was a wake-up call. Okay, mm-hmm. What I'm doing isn't working anymore. I have to make a change, make adjustments, and those adjustments take time. Obviously, it was a work in progress or a work in progress in KC. Alex Smith was there. Matt Castle was there for a hot minute with Andy Reid. And then they got Patrick Mahomes and things changed seemingly overnight in Kansas City. But with Kyle, do I think that there's a wake-up call coming in the form of a firing? No. But I do think that similar to how 2020 was, where they had just said no to Tom Brady. Nope, Jimmy G's our guy. We're not getting Tom Brady. And this team wouldn't have won in 2020 with Tom Brady at all anyways, but still. They said, no, we're sticking to what works for us. Trading Buckner away, getting Javon Kinlaw, Brandon Ayuk. And then after that year, that was a disaster. Injuries everywhere. There was back and forth with Jimmy Garoppolo's medical. And could he play? Could he not play? Shanahan said, you know what? I'm making a change, and it was a massive one. A massive swing for Trey Lance that didn't work, but Shanahan has shown that when they're really good, really successful, he's unafraid to make that big swing the very next season. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if that big swing, whatever that may be, I'm not sure what it is next year, but I am firmly on the side that says Shanahan is going to make a change in some form or fashion. Whether it is changing the way they draft prospects and how they view the team, going from how they were in 2017 through 2020-ish in regards to trenches first, that has now changed to weaponry first, the cornerbacks, the safeties, the wide receivers and running backs first. Maybe it's a reversion back to what they were when they first came to San Francisco, but I don't think Shanahan is a head coach that, despite all the stubbornness he has in regards to play calling and talking to the media and all that stuff, all that exists, but I think the stubbornness that he doesn't have is the unwillingness to take a big swing after a terrible season like 2020, and I'm going to assume that's going to happen again this offseason as well.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point. He has shown, maybe not in what potentially has to happen this offseason, like not in, along those similar paths, but he has shown the ability to say, all right, XYZ didn't work, let's adjust and figure it out and move forward there. Like, he's going to have to make a change, I would imagine, that he hasn't really had to make before, but you're right, there have been other moments where he's had made major adjustments in other parts of his, I don't know, decision-making process, and it has, while the Trey Lance experiment did not work, I think we were all in agreement, you're not winning with the current quarterback he had. Like, you gotta take a swing. You swung and missed, but taking the swing was the right decision.
Right.
Like, boil it down to the 4th-and-2 decision today. Going for it is the right decision. Maybe the wrong play call. Like, you picked the wrong player. You picked Trey Lance. It didn't work out. You picked the wrong call. But, like,
right. The idea was right.
There's a right process going on there. The execution and actually following through on it did not work. So I think that's a very good point. You can point to moments where he has made major adjustments and said, all right, this is not working. We have to change things up. Maybe you ultimately make the wrong decision and it still does not work out, but there's no denying there has to be some sort of major shift in terms of general philosophy, team building, coaching staff building, play calling, X, Y, and Z, all those different things. There has to be some sort of change if this continues down the line that it's currently going on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. And that's what next season's about.
Yeah.
So I saw some Bleacher Report, Gridiron, is that what it's called? Whatever.
Gridiron?
Yeah, whatever their football was like. Is Kyle Shanahan on the hot seat?
Yeah, I saw that too.
Like, no, not now. They've had a lot of success, and I think that counts for something. I think it's really worth remembering, and I brought this up last week, I'll bring it up this week, and I'm going to bring it up after every single loss the rest of the way. Jim Harbaugh went to the NFC title game in 2011. The Super Bowl in 2012, the NFC title game in 2013, they went 8-8 in 2014. Jed York said, that's not good enough, you're gone. Then they did the Jim Tom Sula year, they did the Chip Kelly year, and then they got to Kyle Shanahan. They got out from under the Jim Harbaugh thing too early because of the power struggle with Trent Baalke and all that.
We that was more than just the wins and losses with Harbaugh. Yeah.
But I think if you're Jed York, you're looking at that, and that's instructive here. Hey, this coach that's had a ton of success. Now, again, there's not nearly as much friction now as there was, and you're right. There was so much more to that than wins and losses. But I think that plays a role in this for the 49ers and for ownership. They don't look at this season as, like, colossal failure. Oh, my God. Like, yeah, it's a failure, but not, oh, this coach can't do what we want to do as a team. I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah. And if we are to continue, like, on the Andy Reid comparison, Philadelphia made the NFC Championship game in 2008. Lost to the Cardinals. Went to the playoffs the next year, lost in the first round. Went to the playoffs the following year, lost in the first round. Then 8-8, didn't make the playoffs. And then 4-12, didn't make the playoffs. Like, there's multiple years of not winning a playoff game and then not even making the playoffs and then fully bottoming out to 4-12.
And going the wrong direction.
Yes, yes.
Well, take it further. Then it took them 2 different head coaches, 6 seasons, and a miracle season by Nick Foles to even win a Super Bowl. Yep. Like, it took them rebuilding with, I guess you can say, the dream team with Vince Young and DeMarco Murray and Nnamdi Asamoah and Michael Vick. That was the big team, right? And they were terrible. Wildcat Ronnie Brown. Like, it took them literally rebuilding everything, not once, but twice, with 2 new head coaches, 2 new cultures, and multiple quarterbacks, MVP Carson Wentz to torn ACL Carson Wentz to Nick Foles miracle run. Now he has a statue outside of the arena. Like, it took literally everything to get back to where they were, and I get it. People are mad at Kyle Shanahan, and sure, this year has been pretty bad what the expectations were. But do you want that? You want 6 years of crap of two different rebuilds and multiple different quarterbacks and all that disaster to maybe get a ring? You're better off sticking with Kyle and hope he changes something.
Yes,
that's more bankable than a two new rebuilds to get there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in agreement with you as well. 888-957-9570. Up next is Jan in Mountain View. What's up, Jan? You're on Overtime on 95.7 The Game. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Thank you. What I was wanting to present is I'd like to know what the definition of special teams is, because every time I look up, there's a team that's off of the regular offensive staff that's helping, you know, break a tackle and they get injured or something else happens. I thought this was a different team, like maybe six individuals that were on the sidelines that came in, you know, after the offensive team went off the field or something. I didn't realize that, you know, they were all connected for one player or another. I'd like to know what the definition is and how many players are supposed to be on there, because every time I look up, there's an offensive player or there's a defensive player. What's the definition?
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate the call and the question, Jan.
Good call.
So special teams, it's not like a whole separate roster or anything. You have what, a 53-man active roster. You have only 48 you can dress on game days, mm-hmm. right? And you have to be very particular with who you're dressing and who's active for a game. Generally speaking, your backups on both offense and defense make up your special teams units, and I'm talking mostly like kickoffs, is like when you're kicking field goals, like the linemen generally are you're still your offensive linemen and all that. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about like kick returners, punt returners, the gunners, the blockers on kickoff and punt returns, those are generally speaking reserve players that would go in and play offense or defense if there was an injury ahead of them. And what Kyle Shanahan has spent so much time talking about this year, and part of why he blames the special team struggles on, is they have had injuries to their starters on offense and defense that has forced reserves into offense and defensive action, which has then forced them to play less experienced players on special teams, and there's kind of a carryover effect. But generally, yeah, it's just the reserves on offense and defense that play special teams.
Yeah, everything that's not offense or defense is special teams.
I don't think that's what she was asking.
Was it not?
I think she was figuring out.
Maybe I misunderstood the question.
Who are these players? Who's playing on special teams? Unless I totally misunderstood what she was
San Francisco,
I think you did a good job explaining top
to bottom. I tried my best.
Yeah.
I tried my best. The bottom line is, though, Jan is right, like, every day, every game, you watch a Niners game and you're frustrated by what happens on special teams.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt. It was bad again today.
Once again. So, the thing that's wild, and to Jan's question, I guess, the 49ers have signed players, like, specifically to play special teams. Like, it'll be Oren Burks. He's a reserve linebacker, but he's mostly going to play special teams.
George Odom, unless there's an injury.
McLeod.
Nick McLeod, who's on their practice squad, who they
got called for holding today.
Who is my guy from Arizona? Zeke Turner, linebacker they signed in the offseason. Like, they have signed guys specifically to play special teams to try and improve those units, and it doesn't work. They can't figure it out. It is unbelievable.
Not great. Not
it's almost
great.
Like it's the coach.
Yeah, I wonder who has seen that coming from miles and miles and years and years away. And that's got to be...
If there's that one wake-up call Kyle Shanahan might need, it might be firing Brian Schneider when the year's over with.
Yes, that is something that has
to happen. That's the wake-up call.
Get Brian Schneider out of there. He's like, hey, dang. You know what? I should use Jordan Mason and Christian McCaffrey. That's crazy.
That's just the mental block. That's blocking everything else.
Hey, why do you guys think Jordan Mason doesn't play more?
Sterling returns kicks to open games.
Oh, okay. Because he plays special teams?
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's honestly a very good question.
Yeah, no idea.
That's the thing I haven't been able to get my head around.
Like, I think the best way to use Jordan Mason, and obviously he was very good like the first 6 weeks of the year, and then you could kind of sense him wearing down a little bit. And you and I and Sterling, we've all talked about this all year. And I think I brought this up maybe week two or week three. Like, there was going to come a time where if you give Mason 20 carries every single game, like, he's going to wear down. And he clearly did. I think the perfect way to use Jordan Mason, Give him like 7 touches a game and just let him average like 6 yards a carry on those 7 touches. He will give you those 6 yards a carry.
And if he does start going at 6, 7, 8 yards a carry, keep giving it to him.
Until he doesn't anymore.
Like, I understand wanting, and I guess this is what we had a caller earlier kind of talking about this, and I don't agree on giving Deebo Samuel the Christian McCaffrey touches, but I do agree that, like, why isn't, I understand that Christian McCaffrey is the reigning offensive player of the year and was third in MVP voting last year. Scored 21 touchdowns. Led the league in touches and scrimmage yards. I know. I understand how good he is.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is how he and Jordan Mason can't coexist in an offense. I would love to get Kyle Shanahan in a room and, like, show me on film why this doesn't work. Show me why this, not one snap of it.
I was begging 4th and 2. Fourth
do
and two.
Something interesting. Do
McCaffrey
something different.
In the slot, Mason on the left hip of Allen. Come on, please.
It's like what you're doing clearly isn't working, so try something different. Hey.
Which it's so weird because it's not like in previous years, the reason why Jordan Mason wasn't the number two back was because Shanahan loved Elijah Mitchell and he had that great 2021 year and he could pass block and Mason was so good on special teams. Okay, well, Mitchell's out. So Mason becomes a de facto number two behind Christian McCaffrey. That makes sense. But now this year, Mason has been the more efficient and better runner even when CMC's healthy, yet you're actively choosing to keep that guy off the field. I get there's money involved, there's status involved, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I get CMC being the guy that gets 10-plus carries a game. But the fact is that you can honestly argue a more effective Niners offense this year involves Jordan Mason more than Deebo Samuel and more than Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And no one's saying don't give Christian McCaffrey the football. It's just saying there is better ways to get him the football than just not utilizing Jordan Mason to do so. That's the issue. Is that you're keeping, right now, your best ball carrier on the sideline, not because he didn't earn it or deserve it, because you're choosing to not do it. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem.
Yeah. 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 I agree, and it is something that the Niners, I would love, as you talked about, Kyle, to get a real answer from Kyle Shanahan about that, because obviously he doesn't have to tell the truth to the media anytime he gets asked that question, but I would love to know the actual reason behind it, because it just seems like when you got McCaffrey in there and you've got a running back in there who's proven that on a limited number of touches, he could be very, very, very effective. I don't know how that doesn't help your offense out. Yep. One other area that the Niners seem to really struggle, and not seem, that they definitely struggled in today, defensively, trying to tackle Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs broke 15 tackles today alone. Josh Jacobs by himself. That's the most by a single ball carrier in a game this year. The Niners as a team missed 20 tackles. And I want to play something for you. This is from Niners defensive coordinator Nick Sorensen. Early October, after the loss at home to the Cardinals, before the win in Seattle that at the moment we thought kind of revived the season. This was Nick Sorensen, after the Cardinals lost, asked about Niners missed tackles specifically in that Cardinals game, but really it's been an issue all season. Here's Nick Sorensen nearly 2 months ago.
We miss tackles sometimes because we're aggressive. Like, we do coach our guys to take their shots. If you show, like, make me a cut up of those tackles, and I'll tell you if it's a good or bad one, to be honest. I mean, that's just, we play aggressive, we play violent. We have, you know, sometimes Fred shows up with quite a few missed tackles, but if a guy stops his feet and they're having to take time and that guy loses a yard, but you kind of fall off and now we've got two other guys coming, then that's not a bad missed tackle. Sometimes they're a little bit different. I'd have to quantify it by looking at tape. Then I could probably talk you through if they're good or bad or not.
That was Nick Sorensen nearly 2 months ago on missed tackles. That has still becoming an issue, is still an issue. 20 missed tackles today, and I would ask Nick Sorensen, hey, of the 20 missed tackles, Nick, how many were bad missed tackles? Because to me, it looked like they were just all insane. Pretty darn bad.
Just an insane answer. Like, missing a tackle is objectively a bad thing. Maybe other guys fly in to make the tackle instead.
And he's saying they're coaching that. They're coaching them to be overly aggressive. And sometimes, as a result, you're missing tackles.
Yeah, and I guess it's like base running, right? Like, there's an aggressive base running mistake in baseball. You're trying to stretch your single into a double, and you know what? You got thrown out, but hey, good aggressive mistake, I guess. But that wasn't what I saw today almost ever. It was just guys whiffing in the open field or guys not wrapping up in the backfield. Like, it just, I'm sorry. I can't get behind the idea of a good missed tackle. And the context of that, by the way, was in week four against the Patriots, they missed a season, then a season high, 17 missed tackles.
Yikes.
They followed that up against Arizona with 12. So they had 29 missed tackles across 2 weeks. You cannot sit there if you're a defensive coordinator. There's nothing he could say. There's nothing he could show me on film that would be like, oh, you know what? That's actually, most of those are good. Most of those are good missed tackles. Love the over-aggressiveness. Like, whatever it is, it doesn't work, Nick. Whatever you're teaching is not working.
20 missed tackles today.
20! 20! That's so many.
And that's what happens when you hire a defensive coordinator as your third choice, and he's the guy that's running the get-the-ball drills a year ago.
Yep.
He's a guy that wants to attack, and as Tom Brady says 90,000 times on the broadcast, it's a swarming defense, right? Like, yeah, that's what it was.
He did say that
it
a
was
lot.
A swarming defense.
That was the D'Amico Ryans thing.
Swarm.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was their motto, not the way they played defense, but there was a play in this game, and which happened so many times, so it kind of all molds together, but there's a Wilson on the Packers. He's running towards the outside.
Mm-hmm. Emmanuel.
And it's Jair Brown is the only person on the outside. Your job as a safety, the last line of defense, is to force him back inside to the tackles to hope that even if you miss a tackle, there is the rest of the guys there to finish it off for you. What does Jair Brown do? He cuts inside and says, hey, Wilson, have the entire seam and the sideline to run.
Yep.
19 yards later, a first down. It leads to a Green Bay Packers field goal later, make it 10-0. It's stuff like that, okay, nobody minds when Hufanga or your safeties or even Mustafa in this game take a chance, they blitz, they're in the backfield, they want to make a big play and get a tackle for loss. We're all for that. We love playmaking safeties. But the issue is that when your playmaking safeties aren't making plays and they're being, dare I say, just not playing smart football and they're not guiding the running back inside the tackles, that's bad defense. It's just playing bad defense. You can miss a few tackles here or there. It happens. If that total was 10, not 20, okay, this game probably isn't 38-10. Maybe it's 24-10 still. Like, the fact is, you missed 20 tackles. You can say, yeah, we play fast. We're going to miss some tackles here or there. But 20? And it's not just, oh, Josh Jacobs is great. It's no, you're playing bad fundamental defense leading to 20 missed tackles.
Yeah, and the point of that soundbite from 2 months ago just proves that it has been something that has been hurting the Niners all season long, and who knows what has exactly been happening behind closed doors, but based on what happened today, it doesn't really seem like it's being addressed, Kyle.
20 missed tackles today, but like 9 of them, good missed tackles.
Yeah, we like to
the
see that.
The kind of missed tackle
guys.
We like to see.
Not all missed tackles are created equal. We all know this.
Many have said this. Yeah,
we know this. All right. We got to take a quick break. We got one more segment with you here on Overtime. We will hear from Kyle Shanahan, I promise. Coming up next, it's Mark Randy, Kyle Madsen, Sterling Bennett with you. The Niners fall in Green Bay today 38-10. They're 5-6 on the season. Somehow, some way, still only a game out of the NFC West because the Cardinals lost in Seattle today. The Rams right now at home against the Eagles. They lead by 1, but the Philadelphia Eagles are on the move towards the end of the first half. It's currently 7-6. Rams lead the Eagles. Time for a break. We're back with more Overtime next on 95.7 The Game.